that Red Sox Nation turns to first. This is Boston's most listened to nightly baseball show, The Baseball Reporter with Tony Mann.
Brought to you by Rockland Federal Credit Union, New England Fat Loss, and Jordan's Furniture.
On Boston's home for sports, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Struck him out. Good morning, good afternoon, good night. And the Red Sox win it 5-4. Kimbrel strikes out the side in the ninth inning as his amazing season continues.
Well, this is an understatement, huh? Amazing season for Craig Kimbrel? Holy crap, is it amazing. Unbelievable what Craig Kimbrel's doing this year. I just want to get this number. I want to get these numbers out there again because they're so unbelievable, and then I get to all the particulars with the show. Craig Kimbrel in his last 21 games, has faced 78 batters. 78. How many hits he's given up? Five hits. Three walks. He's only walked three in 78 batters faced while striking out 48 guys. That is inhuman. It is. It's borderline inhuman. 617-779-0985 here on the Baseball Reporters. The program is brought to you by GilletteOnDemand.com. New sponsor on the program, and it has nothing to do with the football stadium. GilletteOnDemand.com. Check it out. Fabulous new service offered by Gillette. In fact, I recently signed up myself. So check it out. Be sure to do so at, again, GilletteOnDemand.com. As I said, 617-779-0985. We'll get to your calls here right away. I know a number of you lined up already. But let me just begin by asking you a question, because I said last night I thought this was a big series coming in. It's June. It's early. They play 162. I get it. I know. I understand. I've covered baseball for a long time, so I understand what it is. There are certain points during the year where you look at it and you say, this is one that's going to mean something, because there is sort of a litmus test to me as a cliche, but it's a checkpoint series. An opportunity to look at the team and say, how do they look against a team that looks like they're going to be pretty good, and let's see how it shakes out. So I thought it was an important game. Some of you, it's June. So now that the Red Sox have won the first game, I ask you again, is it an important series now? Now that they've won it, does it mean something? Now that they've won the first game. And they still have work to do. Because I thought there was a lot of reason to be encouraged last night. That was a good baseball game last night. It was long, as usual. But the Red Sox won a game that, honestly, they had to work to win. Drew Pomeranz threw, was it 124 or 123?
123.
123. Threw 123 pitches in five innings. Craig Kimbrel had to get four outs to win the game and actually get five because one of them was a wild pitch on a strikeout, so he pitched an inning and a third but struck out five guys. Try doing that one. Not an easy trick. And, you know, Kimbrel in particular, now that I think about it, do you remember last year, Murray, Jimmy Stewart? Do you remember last year when I was bitching about Kimbrel? And a lot of people told me that, like, I was overreacting. Kimbrel was actually pretty good. That I was being too hard on Kimbrel, too demanding.
I believe it was incessant bitching.
Okay. But the idea was that, well, no, Kimbrel's an all-star. You're being unrealistic with him. Look at what Kimbrel is doing now and tell me whether or not it was unrealistic or unreasonable to ask more of him.
No, of course not. And looking at him from last year to this year, it's a completely different pitcher. And it was a bit of a roller coaster ride there. And even early, the first couple of weeks of this season. Now, he's maybe the most dominant pitcher in all of baseball. And they have a legit weapon on their hands with this guy.
Yeah, okay. But Tony, he was hurt last year, remember?
Right,
he was hurt last year.
Okay, so but this is my point, is that there are certain guys you look at and you say they, independent of what the numbers are at the end of the year, and if you were to read Craig Kimbrel's numbers at the end of the season, you would say, wow, the guy had a pretty good year, right? I mean, what did he blow? Two saves last year? Is that what it was? I think he had two blown saves.
Yeah, but the walks were high.
Yeah, the ERA was in the mid-threes, right? So you look at all overall. Last year, he had a 3.40 ERA. He struck out 14 batters per nine innings. I think he only blew two. I think he was 31 of 33 in save ops. You weigh it all out, and you said, well, the guy had a good year. And I was telling you, it was nowhere close to what Craig Kimbrel was capable of. This is what Craig Kimbrel is capable of. So again, lower your standards if you want. And I'm not saying they should be the same for every player. Different guys are capable of different things. But this guy right now, this guy's a weapon, as Murray just said. And the great relievers at the end of the game, the great relievers are weapons. And John Farrell actually spoke to this a little bit before the game tonight in New York while meeting them with the media, because someone said to him, would you ever consider using Kimbrel in the eighth? Jimmy, do we have this cut? You know the one I'm talking about? So, because we didn't discuss it beforehand. But he was asked, you know, would you ever consider using him in the eighth the way that, for example, Terry Francona moves around Andrew Miller, even though Francona has a closer in Cody Allen. So Miller's really a setup man, but he moves him around. I mean, again, last year in the playoffs, we saw he used him in the fifth inning against the Red Sox. Farrell, I thought, had an interesting answer to this. Here's what he said.
If we have a chance to spread it out, you know, from an offensive standpoint, but at this moment, it would be with the thought that he would complete the game. To take him out of a, you know, a save situation, that's probably not what we're trying to do there. I wouldn't rule it out at some point. Hopefully it's late in the season. But right now, it would be the design to finish out the game.
Okay, so again, what Farrell is saying there is, well, I'd bring him into the eighth, but if I do, it's to close, to finish. I wouldn't bring him into the eighth to finish the eighth and then give the ball to someone else in the ninth. So he doesn't want to move him around, which honestly, right now, I think is the right move. It's the right move. They don't have enough reliable relievers in that bullpen. The Red Sox don't. 617-779-0985. We'll get right to your phone calls tonight. Let's go to Tyler wants to talk about Craig Kimbrel, so we'll start there. Tyler's in Auburn.
Hey, Matt. Thanks for taking my call. I appreciate it. So basically, I'm just kind of trying to talk about Craig Kimbrel. So he's thrown 26 innings already this year. You know, the numbers are absolutely, you know, they're ridiculous, right? But, you know, the most he's ever thrown is 80. Or around 79-80. Where
77 innings
popping out this year.
He threw 77 innings in 2011. Go ahead.
Yeah, with the Braves, right. Yeah. And last year, you know, 53. I know he's hurt and everything. Where do you see him topping out this year? And also, do you see him, you know, falling off a cliff at some point this year? Also, the last question is, Christian Vasquez, are you starting to get worried about him defensively? I mean, he's been brutal the last few times he's been behind the plate. Thanks.
Okay, so, Tyler, here's what I tell you. With Kimbrel, with regard to Kimbrel, I am starting to get a little concerned. I'd be lying if I told you I wasn't. In fact, Farrell said something similar last night about it. He was asked after the game about how he has aggressively used Kimbrel this year and whether or not he wants to continue to do that. Here's what he said.
You know, it's been five times now, which is a high number. I'll be honest with you, there's reluctance on my part to continue to do that. But there's 2 days off leading up to it. When we've done it previously, there's either been a day or two following where he's been down. I think the only other time that we've not done that has been in Chicago, where he had a couple days off leading up to it, and I think 20 pitches in an inning and a third. He saved the next day, and then we gave him a couple days down. So he's extremely valuable. He's incredibly talented, and it will closely be monitored every time he walks to the mound.
Okay, so again, that's Farrell last night, and I think that ultimately the Red Sox don't want to use Kimbrel like they're using him now all year long. He just can't survive. The only times I remember a Red Sox manager using a guy quite this aggressively, Francona did it with Folk, and he did it mostly in the 2004 playoffs. He did it some during the regular season, but mostly in the playoffs. And he did it with that was in 2004. And he did it with Papelbon in 2008. And honestly, after he did it with Papelbon at the end of 2008, and it was, again, primarily during the postseason, I don't think Papelbon was ever really the same pitcher. Now, that took place at the end of the season and in the postseason, right? So Papelbon had already logged a lot of miles up to that point. But it's not something you want to do, you know, season upon season. And Kimbrel is effectively on pace for career high in appearances and innings. Effectively. So you want to be careful there. And to me, ultimately, this comes down to the depth of arms they have available in that bullpen. The Red Sox aren't a lot. It don't have a lot, which brings me to Farrell, the usage of the bullpen. I want to touch on that when we come back. Also, we'll get into the Jerry Remy situation, the comments Remy made last night when the interpreter, translator, went to the mound while Masahiro Tanaka was out there. We'll get to that, all of that.
We have the Sox covered. The Baseball Reporters, 98.5, the Sports Hub. Radio.com. Radio.com. We have the Sox covered. This is the Baseball Reporters. Tony Mazzarotta, show that Red Sox Nation turns to first. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Larry Rothschild along with the translator.
I forgot what Tanaka, they take out a translator. I don't think that should be legal.
Seriously?
I really don't.
Jackie Bradley, 0 for 1. What is it you don't like about that?
Learn baseball language. You know, learn, you know, it's pretty simple. I mean, you break it down pretty easy between pitching coach and pitcher after a long period of time.
So by now you've heard about this. It was Jerry Remy last night talking about the Masahiro Tanaka's need for a translator on the mound. And these comments have been portrayed as racist, xenophobic, what have you. And look, I understand why. Because you have a foreign pitcher on the mound, and it's like, oh, yeah, you know, doesn't make an effort to speak the language, blah, 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 blah. And I don't think that that's what it was. I actually think Remy's spot on with this. And I'm speaking about Tanaka in particular. Okay? Let's eliminate all the social and cultural debate out of this. Let's just talk about Tanaka in particular. He's been in the big leagues for 4 years. 4 years he's been in the big leagues. And believe me when I tell you, because I covered Daisuke Matsuzaka, and I know plenty of guys who have covered, you know, players from Japan, Korea, and let's not leave out the, you know, Spanish-speaking countries, whether it be or areas, whether you're talking about the Caribbean, Venezuela, you know, certainly in Aruba's case, you're talking about Xander Bogaerts and Dutch and all these, you know, the Dominican, etc. Baseball players learn to communicate very, very quickly. They do. And these players, particularly the ones coming from Asia, learn English pretty quickly. So now I'm talking about Tanaka. I'm not talking about a general rule. Tanaka does not need a translator. He doesn't. And the idea that the you know, in a game that is now conscious, extremely conscious, about pace of play and needless delays and all of these things, having a translator on the mound just feels like an unnecessary step. It does. It feels like an unnecessary step. Overall, relatively small thing, but again, needless step. And so I don't think Tanaka needs one for a second. And I'm going to try to offer you some measure of proof a little bit later in the segment with an example from Ichiro Suzuki, okay, or that involves Ichiro Suzuki. We'll get to that in just a bit. 617-779-0985. Ed is in a truck. Ed, go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'd like to advance a minority take, pardon the pun, on Jerry's commentary. He used a reference of baseball language. I don't think he was referring to English or being xenophobic in any way at all. Major League Baseball is replete with nonverbal communications. There are countless instances of signs being delivered and received all over the diamond. And I think that's what he's referring to when he says baseball language.
Ed, I don't think there's any question that's what he's referring to. Again, it's not that complicated. They've been playing the game for a long time. And remember, a lot of the guys that came over from the Spanish-speaking countries, I used earlier in the day, Louis Tion. When Louis Tion tried to speak English, he was hard to understand. Okay, very difficult to understand. Tion never had a problem on the mound. There was never any issue there. He didn't need a translator. And so, now again, to me, this speaks to pace of play, gumming up the process, all of that. Brandon and Lawrence.
Hey, Maz. Unfortunately, the last call kind of took my thunder. I basically had the, you know, same thing as him as far as, you know, he wasn't speaking English language. He was speaking baseball language, terminology, whether it's even just signs, essentially. I don't think he necessarily needs a translator for that, especially when you've been in the league, you know, big leagues for 4 years.
So, Brandon, yeah, and again, look, this comes off as xenophobic because the way it comes off as, well, this guy's coming to our country, you know, he's earning our money and he doesn't make an effort to speak English. No, that's not it at all. Remy's looking at it and saying, really, we have to have a translator out on the mound to further gum up a game that's already too gummed up to begin with? That's what we have to do? The guy's been in the big leagues for 4 years. And believe me when I tell you, again, I went through this with Daisuke Matsuzaka when he was here. They learned to communicate very quickly. In fact, players used to say it all the time. No, no issue. You know, the baseball is sort of a universal language. The people that play the game know the stuff that needs to be said. And furthermore, some players will use the translator or the interpreter as a crutch. They don't really need it. They like it there. And again, in a post-game interview setting, that's totally fine. For years, Ichiro Suzuki would not conduct, I think his entire career, would not conduct a press conference without a translator. Believe me when I tell you that Ichiro spoke perfectly good English. He once asked me to move my stuff in the dugout so he could put his equipment down. Okay, no problem. Excuse me, he said, you know, can you move your things? He was psychotic with regard to superstitions. And with Ichiro, there's also a famous story that concerns him addressing the All-Stars before the All-Star game every year, in which he would launch into a profanity-laced pep talk, which left guys bursting with laughter. Okay? And then there's this thing with Bob Costas, and Jimmy Stewart knows what I'm talking about here. Ichiro did an interview with Costas, and it's worth playing the cut just to give you an idea of how well he really did understand the English language. Now, Ichiro was here a long time, but I'm telling you, even early in his career, he knew. Okay, listen to the exchange between Costas and Ichiro.
What is your favorite American expression?
August, in Kansas City, it's hotter than two rats in a sock.
Okay, and there's actually a part of that edited out where Costas says to him, you know, what's your favorite American expression? He says, honestly? Like, you want the real one? August in Kansas City is hotter than two rats in a bleeping wool sock. Okay?
It's a pretty good grasp on the English language.
Oh, totally. Please. You know, so again, now look, Remy's taking a lot of heat. And Murray, you said apparently he has to address the media now, or he's going to address the media in New York.
I saw a tweet from Steve Buckley of the Boston Herald said that Remy is going to make some kind of comment before tonight's game. So
he apologized on Twitter today. I suspect this is going to be an extension of that. You know, that he actually gets before microphones and notepads and sounds contrite and, regretful. And, you know, expresses what his real intentions were. Okay,
social justice warriors get get their pacifier.
Yes,
babies.
Yes, and wouldn't surprise me if he even says something during the game tonight. Like, it would not surprise me. Although, now that I think of it, Nesson probably says, nope, say what you got to say before the game and let's move on. Right, so they'll probably go that route. Patrick is in L.A. Go ahead.
Hey, Mas. Wasn't Tanaka, you talk about him being high maintenance. Isn't this the guy, when he signed his contract with the hated Yankees, that he rented out a jumbo jet and flew into Kennedy or LaGuardia, Kennedy, and made like a whole big scene that he was arriving? Am I wrong on that? Or
Tanaka you're talking about?
Yeah, Tanaka.
Yeah, Patrick, honestly, I don't remember. What has become more custom, or I should say, not more custom, but what has become custom for a lot of these guys now is to have their own little entourage. And I remember with Matsuzaka that the members of the Japanese media frowned on that. Like, the idea that Matsuzaka would have his own interpreter, would have his own, chef, would have his own strength guy or, physical therapy guy, whatever. Strength and conditioning guy is what I meant to say. The idea that he would have his own people, the Japanese media looked at it and said, it's a mistake. You know, because they believe in the team concept. When you become part of the team, you all operate under the same umbrella. And so you can't have your own little operation because it takes away from the team. And honestly, I think it's a great approach. In fact, isn't it what we used to get pissed about Pedro? Or pissed at Pedro for? Pedro was on his own program. He didn't do things with the team. We got pissed at him because he was a diva. So I think what the Japanese media was expressing that time about Matsuzaka was they didn't want him to be a diva. Don't be a pain in the ass. Just because you're getting the money here and everything else doesn't mean you don't have the same obligations to the team that everyone else does. Let's sneak in one more here quickly. Josh is in Newton. Go, Josh. And then we're going to move on. We'll be done with the Remy thing. Go ahead, Josh.
Hey, Tony. Thanks. Yeah. I don't think there's much of a competitive advantage or anything to having translators go out to the mound like that.
It's not about a competitive advantage, Josh.
What's that?
It's not about a competitive advantage.
What is it about then? I guess if these ball clubs are so rich, they have the money, spend the translator if it makes them more comfortable. I just don't like it because it sends guys like Curt Schilling and the other right wing nuts saying, oh, see, we live in like in America where everybody has to apologize. And I'm a liberal, and it's just like it gives ammunition to those guys. I didn't think it was that bad either way.
Yeah, Josh, listen, it really isn't. That's why I said it's a small thing. Okay.
Yeah.
What does it add? An extra minute to a conference? 2 minutes? I don't know. That part of it's fine. I'm just telling you, though, that really it is needless. I mean, when we look at it, And we say, in a game, too many mound visits, too much time between pitches. Now when the pitching coach goes out there to talk to his pitcher, he's got to bring a translator and a conversation has to go three ways? I mean, it's not necessary. Now, look, at least with Tanaka, I don't believe it is. Now, you want to tell me, and I said this earlier, you want to tell me that a first-year player from Japan and maybe a kid who grew up in a more rural area, didn't have a lot of schooling or whatever, and you bring him over here and he's having trouble with the language, hey, look, can we have a translator on the mound at least to start? Sure, fine. I'm okay with that. I mean, that's logical to me. I'm telling you, in the case of Tanaka, he doesn't need it. He doesn't need it. He's been here 4 years. And I just think that, you know, to now this is another thing that you sort of look at and say, can we whittle this part of it out? I don't think we'd be wrong to do that.
The Baseball Reporter's Tony Maz, 98.5, The Sports Hub. Radio.com. Radio.com. This is The Baseball Reporter's.
Which makes all the sense in the world if you're the Red Sox.
With Tony Maserati, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Am I afraid the bullpen will be overused?
Yeah.
No, I'm not. Now, that'll be dependent upon how consistent our rotation goes into ball games and pitches quality innings. That will always be a main contributor to the success of a bullpen. I know that there's been a lot of attention given to the four-out save by Craig, the number of times we've used him. But his availability is always monitored closely on the preceding days of rest. So, no, I'm not. I think right now our bullpen has probably pitched the third fewest number of innings in the American League. So that's a testament to what the rotation has done to date.
Again, that's John Farrell. Before tonight's game in New York, Rick Porcello and CC Sabathia are starting pitchers. But I thought this was an important cut to play because he was asked about the bullpen and the usage of the bullpen. And you heard Farrell saying there, I think we pitched the third fewest innings in the bullpen in the American League, which is a credit to the starting pitchers and the number of innings that starting pitchers are going. So I looked it up. Farrell's wrong. The Red Sox relievers have pitched the fewest innings in the American League. The fewest. Not the third fewest, the fewest. Which means their starters generally are not getting boxed in games early. And they're not overly reliant on the bullpen. So let's not confuse the issues here.
So, Tony, this is also in the past, since Farrell's been the manager, he's been in the top five as far as starter innings in his career as Red Sox manager.
Okay, so what you're saying is that typically he has a long leash.
Yes.
Right? He's not a quick hook guy. He leaves these guys on the mound, maybe sometimes to a fault. And last night, perfect opportunity to second guess with Drew Pomeranz in that fifth inning. He went out there, I think, with 94 and then threw another 29. He finished at 123. 123 in five innings. And you know what? Honestly, I didn't have a problem with it. First of all, I don't like Pomeranz. So after that whole thing in Oakland where he got pissed after he got taken out of the game with 94 innings, part of me said, fine, you want to stay in with 94 going into the fifth? Fine, stay there. Throw 150 for all I'm concerned. If your arm falls off, don't blame me. That was me saying that, not Farrell. From Farrell's side, I think he looked at it and said, you know what? We just lost Eduardo Rodriguez. Sale's not pitching great. He had to grind it out on Sunday. Price is coming back from an injury. We got Brian Johnson coming in here over the weekend, but he's got this hamstring thing going on, so I don't know what the hell we're going to get out of him. I need Pomeranz to give me a little more. Drew, you're going to give me another inning. And I don't think the Red Sox have a lot of reliable relievers out there. Robbie Scott came into the sixth inning last night, and at that point I went, uh-oh. Are they trying to give this game away? I thought it was a mistake to go to Scott. Scott gave up a run, but they got through the inning, and ultimately they won the game. I just feel like to get to Kimbrel, if the starter doesn't go deep, to get to Kimbrel is a minefield for Farrell. And overall, I mean, I'm not a Farrell fan, but he's done a half-decent job there. The bullpen's third in the league in ERA, in relief ERA, and they've pitched the fewest innings. I don't think that that's a coincidence. I think he's minimized the exposure to the bullpen. Mark is in Boston. Mark, quickly.
Hey, Matt. I just wanted to talk about pace of play real quickly. So I have a two-part idea to increase pace of play, or as I would say, pace of action.
Okay, just be quick. Just be quick, right. Rather. Go.
Robotic strike zone, and then raising the strike zone up a couple inches so that balls have to be in the meat of the plate. The other big thing with the robotic strike zone is you eliminate players just looking back at the ump after every
pitch. So listen, you don't need to explain them to me. I'm going to stop there just because I want to get to other calls. The robotic strike zone I don't like. I like an umpire back there. Call me a traditionalist or whatever, but I want a human element in there. But you're not the first to suggest that. The other one with the strike zone, they're actually, I think, aren't they doing the opposite, Jimmy? Aren't they going to, oh no, they're moving the strike zone back up to try to get more balls in play because they found that the ball at the hollow of the knee or beneath the hollow of the knee is unhittable. So I think they're already going to, or they've already done that one anyway, or they're going to do that one. Mark is in Quincy. Go ahead, Mark.
Hey, Matt, how you doing?
Good.
I got a question about Sonny Gray. What do we take to get him? And I just think he'd be a great addition to our rotation. I've followed his career closely since he came up. I feel like he's got the medal to pitch in Boston as well as in the playoffs. And I feel like he's coming off injuries, and I think maybe he kind of get him on the cheap, you know what I mean?
Okay, so I like Sonny Gray. I'd love to see him here. I mean, again, assuming health. But honestly, the Red Sox have given up enough for starting pitchers at this point that I don't want them to make another big trade for a starting pitcher. I think they've already gone too far there, or far enough is a better way to say it. So I'm not interested in doing that part of it. I like Gray. Okay, I just think, honestly, again, just talking about the bullpen, they don't have enough reliable relievers out there. I'd rather see them do something like that if and when the time comes. If and when. We have a couple open lines, 617-779-0985. Henry's in Needham.
Hey, how's it going, Tony?
Good.
Quickly before I get to my thing, I just want to let you know that you and Mike were talking about sort of old baseball fans. Just want to let you know that I'm an 18-year-old kid who loves baseball, and I love talking about all that crap. Just wanted to know, in terms of, like, you know, Kimbrel's usage, I just wanted to ask, you know, is there any way that sort of, like, Farrell can do something different there so that he doesn't have to be used, or do they literally just not have the guys to get him there?
So, look, Henry, I think it's both. I mean, I think they're going to back off the guy here at some point. You know, they can't just keep trotting him out there for five outs all year long and think he's going to have anything left at the end of the year, especially with the way he throws. Like, honestly, I even said this earlier. Naturally, it got twisted around. But I don't think he's been quite as sharp in the last few outings as he was in, say, the previous 15.
Well, that's fair, especially, yeah, these last two, especially last Friday night in Baltimore. Yeah, it was not shaky's a bit strong, but it just wasn't as sharp.
So to me, we make all this noise about the Kimbrel strikeouts, which are great. Don't get me wrong. I mean, he's averaging 17 strikeouts per nine innings.
Or Saturday night in Baltimore.
That is ungodly, 17 strikeouts per nine. In the big leagues, that's like a little league or video game number, for crying out loud. That's a ridiculous number. Of equal importance is the walks. Last year, Kimbrel walked 5.1 batters per nine. That is dreadful. This year, the number is 1.7. He's cut that to a third. I mean, he's gone from 5.1 to 1.7. And for a guy who throws with his velocity, to be under two is excellent. I'm happy with under three, for crying out loud, if it's Kimbrel. He's been a precision on top of it, and it doesn't mean he's living on the corners. But his stuff is so good, all he has to do is be in the strike zone, okay? Because he's so damn hard to hit. I thought the Yankees helped him out a little bit last night. He wasn't as in the strike zone as he usually is. They chased some balls out. And so, you know, he got a little bit of help. But he got four outs and he had five strikeouts because a runner reached on a wild pitch, which honestly, I think Vasquez should have blocked that ball. I want to get to Scooter Gennett in the four home run game because you're going to have to indulge me here for a minute. So I'm going to ask Jimmy Stewart, in case you missed it, last night, the Reds beat, I think it was the Cardinals, 13-1. Scooter Gennett did something that is among the rarest of the rare feats in baseball. Now, if you've listened to this program in the past, you know that there are a good number of achievements in baseball that I have absolutely no use for. So, for example, the cycle, I couldn't give two craps if someone hits for the cycle. Big deal. You get it, as I like to say, it's baseball bingo is what it is. Congratulations, you got one of everything. Four homers in a game. Here's what it sounded like in Cincinnati.
Gennett waiting. Got a fastball. And bye-bye, baby! And that ball is tagged into right center field. Is this going to go? You got to be kidding. Now this one down the left field line. Has he done it again? He has done it again! Liner to right field! Gennett, the first Red ever! With four home runs in a game!
Not one, not two,
Actually, no, I can't believe it.
You're mad about this. Why?
So let me explain something to you here. First of all, the home runs that he hit, the first one was an absolute bomb to center field. Scooter Gennett, I think he plays third for the Reds now, but he has played second. I think he's played some outfield. You know who he is? He's a slightly bigger Brock Holt, is what he is. He's basically if one of you guys could check, I think he's played second, third, and outfield. Okay, he's literally one of these guys that you move around to different spots. I mean, he can play one position regularly. Last year, he hit 14 home runs, which is a career high. He has never been over 10. Prior to last night, he had 3 home runs this season. So two things. First of all, there are a lot of people in baseball who think the ball is juiced. Secondly, Cincinnati's a bandbox, both of which I'm willing to throw out the window. A 4-home-run game is a 4-home-run game. I don't care how you slice it. The first homer was a bomb to center. 2 of them went to right, and 1 of them was an opposite field shot. You don't exactly hit the ball out of the ballpark to the opposite field if you're some sort of lightweight. What'd you find on Jeanette Murray?
Second baseman.
Strictly second?
No, that's most of the stories I've read about him today.
Okay.
Just call him infielder. How about that?
Okay,
his baseball reference page has 4-7-5-9.
Okay, so again, second, third, left, and right. Right? Okay, so he's exactly what I thought he was.
Brock Holt.
So I always thought, we played this game on the afternoon show once where Felger would rattle off these feats and I would say whether the achievement was useful or useless. No hitter, useless. Perfect game, useful. Cycle, useless. 4-home-run game, useful. Until last night. When you look at the guys who have hit 4 home runs in a game, to me this is one of the, it was... one of the real pristine lists in baseball history. And pristine's too strong a word because it's not totally perfect. But the guys on that list included Josh Hamilton, Carlos Delgado, Rocky Colavito, Lou Gehrig, Sean Green, Mike Schmidt, Willie Mays, Bob Horner, Mike Cameron, Mark Whitten. Now you get to those last three. Bob Horner, say what you want, but legit power guy. And if he made contact, it was going out of the ballpark. Nothing fluky about him having a 4-homer game. Mark Whitten, a complete bum with a bad attitude but had unbelievable ability.
Come on, that's kind of fluky.
Okay, but Mark Whitten, when he came up, he and, was it him and Devon White, rather, who came up with the Blue Jays at the same time, were regarded as sort of like the future of the Blue. Maybe it was Lloyd Mosby. It was one of those guys.
All three of those.
Okay, Whitten was regarded as like a potential phenom. He was a gifted player. Mike Cameron was traded for Ken Griffey Jr. Okay, again, extremely talented player. You know, maybe didn't quite fulfill his potential, but they were all guys who had power. They were all guys who had great talent. Now you've got this little rugrat, this little twerp on the 4-homer list.
What about Sean Green being on that list, too? And I know he had talent, but Sean Green hitting 4 home runs in one game, that's fluky, man.
Sean Green was a terrific hitter, Murray.
4 home runs in one game is a fluke for Sean Green.
Okay, but I'm telling you, at least you could look at Sean Green and say, all-star. Sean Green was an all-star. Like, no, they're not all Hall of Famers. But Mike Cameron, all-star caliber player. Mark Whitten, again, knucklehead. But the ability, tremendous. Josh Hamilton, tremendous ability.
What are Joe Adcock in 1954 with the Milwaukee Braves and Pat Seary of the White Sox?
Okay, so I said it's not a pristine list. But among modern players especially, like, you know, and I threw Gehrig in there too. Don't get me wrong, I did. But when you really look at it, that was a list I said, you don't have any complete garbage rugrat players on that list. You do now. I almost feel like it destroys the accomplishment.
Tony, you want to know my favorite perfect game of all time?
Go.
Philip Humber of the White Sox.
I know. So that one, like, I see that too. And I used to think a perfect game was a, you know. And then last night, Pac-Man brought up Philip Humber and I went, oh, maybe I need to rethink that one too.
Matt Cain was a decent one.
Scooter Gennett. Good God, on the 4-homer list, Scooter freaking Gennett. Ugh. Boy, did that let the air out of my balloon last night. Totally. I just think it completely minimizes the achievement now.
The Baseball Reporters with Tony Mazz, 98.